Finding the right cleat can be transformative. Believe me, I've worn plenty during my career. So getting the right balance is crucial. The cleat needs to feel good on your foot, but also feel good connecting with the ball. The New Balance Furon 7 Plus is built with both of those points in mind, offering overall comfort and precise striking in the game's fastest moments. Because, as I learned the hard way, because I didn't possess much of it, speed matters in soccer. That's why the Furon 7 Plus is built for accuracy and precision at rapid pace, and is engineered specifically for use on firm ground. Why is this the ideal cleat, I hear you ask? Well, not to get too scientific, but the Furon 7 Plus offers a lightweight yet supportive hypo-knit with mesh lining upper construction and is paired with offset lacing for a truer strike of the ball, which is a long way of me saying that your game will immediately get better when these are on your feet. Learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Hi, hello, and welcome to your favorite average to good podcast. Call it what you want. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Jesse Marsh and Charlie Davies. We've got a great show for you today. We're going to recap a little bit of the midweek action for Americans, namely Christian Pulisic. We're going to talk CONCACAF Champions Cup and how many MLS teams made it to the semifinals. Maybe just one. We got Paul Tenorio coming on from The Athletic to talk about the new MLS rules that are being implemented. Going to be spending a little bit more money. Is that a good or bad thing? I assume everybody's going to think that's good. The Glossa Network turns one, and we got some big fixtures for everybody to watch on the weekend. We'll get into that very soon. But first, it's Word of the Day. How excited are you guys, 0 to 10, to play Word of the Day? Jesse Marsh, what are you saying?
11. This one goes 11. To 11.
I love it. I love it. Chuck?
20.
You feeling good?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. All right. Well, to beef up our vocabulary around our favorite sport, we've exhausted the word football, soccer, fuchi ball, whatever. So we're going to focus on a word that's Charlie's favorite position, which is striker.
Defender. Delitero, defender. Oh, okay.
I think he's kind of a closet defender in his mind.
Yeah.
But in one corner of the world, forward is known as forvet. So Jesse forvet. And Charlie, what language is this? And where is this word spoken? I'll give you some clues. All right, guys, here is the first clue. This country's national team finished third at the 2002 World Cup. But there's a second clue before you jump in.
Korea.
The top scorer in this country's top division is called Gol Krali, which means goal
Turkey.
King.
Turkey. I'm going to go with Turkey.
Turkey.
Yeah.
Jesse, I'm sorry. Chuck got it.
That is congratulations, so bad. Charlie Davies. It's so bad.
Hey. Congratulations. Is that how many in a row now for you, Chuck?
I feel like
I won the last one. I won the last
one. Eight in a row.
Jimmy. I got Norway, Jimmy. I got Norway last time.
Jimmy, I think
so. Don't sell me short.
I forgot. We do so many
Jimmy,
of these
shows. I feel like it's
anyway,
eight in a row.
It might be eight in a row. I got some revisionist history. It's part of my charm, fixed. Jesse Marsh.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into the first topic. That's AC Milan taking on Roma in the first leg of the Europa League quarterfinals. The game was at the San Siro, and Roma come away with the 1-0 win off of a set piece. Christian Pulisic started the game, played 78 minutes, and in those 78 minutes, he had the most touches and attempted passes in a single match for AC Milan outside of potentially one against Borussia Dortmund in the Champions League. We still got to figure out those stats. Either way, he was highly influential. So Jesse, as a resident now of Italy, I don't know if I can call you a full-time resident, but you're there.
Si, signore. Si, signore.
What did you like about Christian's performance? Because I thought he was very active, and I just liked his burst, his change of speed. He just seemed like he was playing with a lot of purpose in this game.
Let me start with what the match was, okay? It was sometimes awful to watch because it was two teams playing man-marking against each other. So the whole match was like them just canceling each other out, difficult to put sequences of passes together and almost a stalemate. Roma winds up getting a corner kick goal from Mancini. But for me, the best way to beat man marking is to create double moves and to be running behind the back line. And for the most part, Milan was too stagnant. It didn't have enough movement, dynamic movement like this, except for Christian. Christian was the one that was trying to run behind the back line. He was the one that was dribbling inside, making a pass, and then trying to slip in, making slanting runs behind the back line to be in dangerous spots. He was demanding the ball at times. Like, this is the most, from a body language perspective, the most personality that I've seen him have on the pitch when he's been with Milan, which I think is a really positive trend, and that he's feeling more and more at home, and he's feeling more and more like he's a big part of the team. So I was even surprised at the 78th minute when Pioli took him out, because I thought he was by far the most effective player. So really positive signs for Pulisic. Great to see him in great form. And you know, it'll be interesting now. They'll go to Rome, and what will that game look like? It'll be probably a lot of the same, but certainly Milan has to be much more active. They need players that want to run. Leao needs to be thinking about running in behind more, being more dynamic, if they want to make a run at the title.
Now, Chuck, really quick, though. Sorry, I know you're going to jump in on Jesse's thoughts, but I wanted to add a little layer to it. And that is, given that we saw Christian play against Lecce in the 10 spot, and I know Ruben Loftus-Cheek is back in the team, but there was something about having Leao, Pulisic, and Chukwueze on the field at the same time, which I think, to Jesse's point, made them a lot more dynamic. Do you think Pioli might consider that for the second leg? And I don't know who's going to have to get sacrificed, because Loftus-Cheek has been good for them this season and does provide a different type of player profile coming out of midfield. But I just think Christian, I don't know, he seemed to be a nice spark of energy, whether he's playing on the right. But when you have Chukwueze on the field too, I just think it makes them a little bit more unpredictable for their opponent.
Well, I would add, now that you're down a goal heading into the second leg going to Rome, that the midfield trio didn't really work that well with Reinders and Benacer and Loftus-Cheek, that maybe that's where you do Reinders and Loftus-Cheek and you play Pulisic as that 10, because you need more attacking options now. But what was, I think, really apparent to me in this game was that De Rossi has his team playing with this energy and this passion, this commitment to not only defend, but also to attack. Pellegrini looks like a new player. So I think Christian being central, because in this game, he went to find the ball. That's why he had so many touches. He was looking for the game, because Leao touched the ball not that often. Giroud wasn't all that involved. So he was trying to make the game for the team, and you could tell that the team trusted in him to get everyone going. So him being central, I think, would open up more spaces for Leao, Chukwueze, and Giroud.
Okay, so Jesse, talk to me about this, the set pieces in particular. When I went and visited you when you were coaching Leeds, you just beaten Chelsea, you were preparing for Barnsley in the League Cup, and it felt like maybe there was something going on that season where you guys had a tough time defending set pieces. And now when you get to the highest levels, I think, in Europe, and these games get decided by very thin margins, set pieces usually decide games. And so how do you address that as a coach? When we can all sit here and say, and I've said it before on the podcast, defending set pieces is not about talent. It's about a desire to make a play and to do your job. And it has to get frustrating as a coach when your guys aren't doing that in the biggest moments. How do you, as a coach, address that? And how does Pioli address that moving forward?
They, you know, both teams man marked on set pieces, and Loftus-Cheek lost Mancini on the play, and they tried to set a little block with Lukaku on that play, but he got away from a little bit. It was a great service. I thought Milan's service on the day also wasn't good enough, so they weren't dangerous enough on their set pieces. I mean, listen, there's instruction, there's a plan, there's instruction, there's training, and then there's demanding that the team performs at their best level and takes set pieces very seriously. And, you know, I mean, I don't know that set pieces always determine, but they're an important part of the match, no question. And so you have to make sure that you're with all the match planning that you're doing in preparation for each opponent, that you also, I think, have certain principles that you put in place for both attacking and defensive set pieces, but and then you also have some variation where you feel like you can catch an opponent or find the weaknesses. So I've actually been pretty lucky, Jimmy, I think, because for me, the biggest signal to a team that set pieces matter are how much time you as a coaching staff dedicate to preparing and training them. And typically I've spent a lot of time because I do value them. And typically the teams I've had have been pretty good at them. But yeah, I mean, this is always a factor.
All right. So speaking about AC Milan's remaining schedule, at least in April, it's pretty difficult. They're currently 14 points behind Inter Milan in Serie A. And obviously they still want to progress in the Europa League, a competition they've never won before. They take on Sassuolo away from home this weekend. They got Roma away next midweek in the Europa League second leg quarterfinals. Then they have, well, I guess they share a home with Inter Milan, but the San Siro, the Milan derby happens in a couple weeks. And then they head to Turin to take on Juventus. So a lot of tough games in their immediate future. And I'm very curious to see how Christian Pulisic will perform. But right now, he looks super sharp, so I'm excited to see how he does in the biggest of games. All right, we're going to take our first break of call, what you want. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the CONCACAF Champions Cup. So don't go anywhere.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Welcome back to Call What You Want. We talked a little Europe. Now let's talk a little CONCACAF, North America, our biggest competition for clubs. It is the CONCACAF Champions Cup. And the quarterfinal leg two finished. Here are some results. Can't wait to get your guys' thoughts on this. We'll start with the non-MLS matchup as Pachuca beat Herediano. Herediano? I think I tried
to look at the aggregate
pretty well.
Herediano.
Yeah, 7-1 aggregate. Pachuca won 2-1 in leg two in Mexico, but 7-1 aggregate. So Pachuca goes on. Then we have Club America finishing off New England Revolution. I know Chuck's wearing the jersey, but another tough night for his club. Yeah. Aggregate 9-2 in favor of Club America. Zendejas scores another goal in that one. Shout out to Alejandro, Alex Zendejas. And then Tigres go up early. Patrick Schulte makes a mistake trying to dribble out of the back or trying to dribble out of a situation. Andre Pierre Gignac steals it from him. And you think at that point, Tigres is going to go on to win the game. Columbus fight back. And they get a 1-1 draw. Diego Rossi scores in the 60th minute. They end up winning in penalties. Patrick Schulte ultimately made a ton of saves, including a couple in penalties. So shout out to him for fighting through that adversity. And Columbus are the one MLS team that advances to the semifinal. And they're going to be taking on Monterrey, who won 3-1 over Inter Miami and Leo Messi and Luis Suarez, amongst others. Aggregate 5-2 in that one. Brandon Vasquez scores again. A goalkeeper mistake. Drake Callender made a mistake. Vasquez took advantage. That was the first goal of the game and really set the tone for how that one was going to go. Any big surprises here for you, Chuck? I'll come to you first as a New England Revolution supporter and voice of the team.
Yeah, I'm not surprised with the Revs. They've performed poorly all season, so that's not a surprise at all to me. And they had played relatively poor opponents up until that point. So maybe they thought they were further ahead than they were. Realistically, in league play in MLS, they've been bad. And then this, I think, the performance at home where Club America beat them 4-0 was a signal of just how bad. It was completely one-sided. And so that's not a shock to me. I think Columbus Crew taking down Tigres is massive in the way they did it, in the fashion they did it, because they had to do it in the second game on the road in Mexico. So for me, Wilfred Nancy just has Columbus playing in a particular way. I love the fact that he said, I told Schulte, you just keep going, play the same way. I don't want you to change the way that you play. He has full confidence in his players and his style. And so the Columbus Crew, I think, beating Tigres to get to the semifinal is massive.
Yeah, anything stand out for you, Jesse? And what are your thoughts on Wilfred Nancy? Because I love his quotes. Anytime I see a lot of his stuff or what he's saying, I just nod my head like, yep, I like that. I like that. And it's more about staying true to who they are and how they want to play. And if that means they're going to lose trying to play that way, he'd rather be that type of team and that type of coach than that one that's trying to drastically change things or styles based on the opponent.
Yeah, I think I referenced once before in this podcast that Wilfred Nancy was in the academy at Montreal when I was the coach at Montreal.
Yeah.
And when, you know, the different times that I would speak to him or we would have interaction in Montreal, he always asked the right kinds of questions and wanted to learn more about what we were trying to achieve and then some of the things that he would think about and what did I think about that and would that fit with what we're doing. And, you know, so I always knew that he was a serious football guy. I like that he has a distinct style of play. It's clear that when you see his teams play, what we always used to say in Red Bull is take away the jersey and watch the team. And is that a Red Bull team? Right. And I feel like when you watch Wilfred's teams play, if you took away the Columbus Crew, you would still see that this team play. This is a Wilfred Nancy team. So, and that coupled with, I think, who he is as a person and his leadership qualities tend toward him being a high potential coach. I mean, he's already won MLS Cup. Now he's achieving in CONCACAF Cup. He's done a great job. And then, you know, I'd say in general, I know from competing in this tournament, the timing of the tournament is difficult for MLS teams because you're just not in your top form. So you have to be incredibly precise with how you prepare, what your match plan is, and you have to account for the fact that going down to Mexico, often playing in heat and elevation and with rowdy crowds, right? Active, hateful crowds, that you have to be incredibly focused on exactly what it's going to take for you to be successful. And if I'm not sure, but I think we were the first team to win when we beat Tijuana. I think that was in 2018 in a knockout phase. I think we were to beat a Mexico team. But then when we played Chivas in the semifinal, we made in the two-game series, we outplayed them and made one mistake. Tyler Adams on an offensive attacking corner kick. And where I said, we cannot lose any balls in the back because they will look to press us. They man mark. They will come after you. We made one mistake and Tyler lost the ball on an attacking corner kick trying to play a ball back to Luis Robles. And that goal cost us and we lost the series 1-0. But that's what the margin of error is a lot like against these teams. That same year, Toronto was behind and then ahead and played really well, got to the final and lost in, I think, extra in PK and penalties, in extra penalties, right? Maybe I'm wrong about that. But nonetheless, you know, the games are difficult, the environments are difficult, and you have to be incredibly precise and sharp and good on the day to come out as the victor.
I got a lot of questions with regard to this, and Chuck, I want you to explore it first, but we talk about how we're not in midseason form when we play in the CONCACAF Champions Cup, and Mexico is already kind of well-versed in who they are and what they're about, and they've kind of found their rhythm into a season where MLS teams are still early on in theirs or in preseason at times based on the scheduling. And then when League's Cup now comes around, Mexico's not really in season and we're not even playing games in Mexico. So it definitely favors the American teams or MLS teams, I should say. So how do we bridge that gap? Cause I want to start playing where it's where we can start to exert our dominance in a way that's on equal footing. I'm not so sure, but I really value the games in Mexico because I think it puts, and even when I was playing in these competitions, you're just put under a different type of pressure than you are when you're playing in MLS or even playing Mexican teams at home. But when you go down to Mexico, it's different, Chuck. You know this, right? Even if you're playing for the national team as well, you have to block it out and you have to rely on each other and your teammates in a way that you might not feel that same type of pressure. And I just think that helps you grow as a team. And I'm so stoked that Columbus got through that and got a good result against one of the best teams in Mexico. But I don't know. I'm a little bit torn on it. I don't want to make any excuses for MLS, but when Mexico comes, Mexican teams come and play in League's Cup, it's not fair to them in that competition either. And so I'm a little torn. Yeah. What do you say?
I'm with you. There's definitely a difference when you play on the road and you're tested and you lose possession and either you're chasing for 10, 15 minutes, whatever it is. And you realize the value of possession, or like Jesse said, you're maybe playing better, but it's that one mistake that ends up costing you the match. Right. And I think that's the type of pressure that allows players to grow, teams to grow, and gets Major League Soccer to be at a whole new level.
I actually think that moment helped Tyler Adams in his development because he realized the gravity of everything you do on the pitch. It matters. Everything, every decision, every action, you have to be precise with everything you do. And he learned the hard way. We learned the hard way, right, as a team. But yeah, and you can't, it's even, we've talked a little bit about, I think it was on the show with Clint Dempsey, and he said, you know, we're the U.S. right now is playing all the games at home. We're playing Copa America at home. We're playing the World Cup at home. Obviously, these are incredible advantages that we want to have. But to really grow as a team and as a player, you need to be put over your head and you need to be challenged in ways that you've never been challenged so that you understand, again, what the gravity, what every moment is like and how it matters and how you need to adjust the way you think, the way you play, how fast you think and how fast you play. Yeah, these things are incredibly important in players and people's development.
It's almost Jimmy, that in terms of the U.S. men's national team, from here on out, every match that they should play should be on foreign soil in a different place, because you know you're playing at the comfort of home, right? Mm-hmm. For the World Cup, all the matches leading up to the World Cup. So put them in unfamiliar places, make them as uncomfortable as it can be to strengthen resilience, the quality of the opponents. So then they come to the World Cup and you're on home soil, you really notice the difference.
Well, speaking of the World Cup, the Club World Cup is happening in the U.S. as well in 2025. Inter Miami, who obviously were trying to get into that competition, and I'm sure everybody else that's sponsoring that competition wants Leo Messi to be involved. They have now crashed out with their loss to Monterrey. So we have our final four. Pachuca will take on Club America. Columbus Crew will take on Monterrey. Those games, first leg of the semis, will kick off on April 30th, and they should be some good ones. All right, we're going to take our next break. When we come back, Paul Tenorio from The Athletic will be joining us, and we're going to get into some of the new MLS rules, and it should be a lot of fun.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right!
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to Call What You Want. I'm Jimmy Conrad alongside Jesse Marsh and not Charlie Davies for this segment of the show. We brought in somebody a little bit more handsome and definitely a lot more smart. It's Paul Tenorio from The Athletic. And Paul, it's great to see you. First and foremost, I saw you in LA last weekend. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. You know, I got a little sun, which is always important when you live in Chicago to escape in March and April and go somewhere that actually has some sun that's showing in the sky. But it's been quite a week in MLS world this week. So busy.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is that not only were you there in LA to see El Tráfico, like I was, LAFC versus the LA Galaxy, but also you were convening because the MLS owners were convening to explore some opportunities to maybe expand the salary cap. Now, before we get into these new MLS rules that are now going to go into effect, Tata Martino, the head coach of Inter Miami had these comments after his team got knocked out of the CONCACAF Champions Cup, which I think is good, let's say, connective tissue from the segment we just had to what we're going to talk about now. Now, Tata Martino said the teams that have advanced in the Champions Cup are the teams that have the best squads in Mexican football. I mentioned recently that until MLS relaxes its many roster rules in order to build more robust squads where player absences, injuries, suspensions aren't as difficult to overcome, evidently, Mexico will always have an advantage. I threw always in there. I don't know why I did that, but Mexico will have an advantage. So taking that, Paul, can you explain to us and all of our listeners and people that watch us and who are loyal to us, what happened at these MLS meetings and what was the summation of everything? And do you think it's good for the league? Lots of questions here.
Sure. Well, a lot happened at these meetings. You know, first of all, Gianni Infantino from FIFA was there. So the start of the meetings was based around listening to FIFA talk about their ideas regarding the growth of the league, the growth of the sport in the United States with the Club World Cup coming, with the World Cup coming. And at one point in the meeting, they do vote on things that have been passed in the subcommittees. And in Major League Soccer, they've recently renamed it. It used to be called Product Strategy. Now it's the Sporting and Competition Committee. And there is basically three rules that they're going to bring in the middle of the season. And typically you don't see bigger rule changes in the summer, but they made these changes to try to take a little bit more advantage of the transfer windows. And I'll try to run through them kind of quickly. The first two are a little bit easier, so we'll start there. MLS teams typically have a one buyout per year that they can buy out a player's contract to open up cap space on the roster. They doubled that to two buyouts per season. In the past, MLS teams could get up to $1.2 million in general allocation money that they could convert out of a transfer fee for a player that they've sold. Now they can convert up to $3 million of transfer fees per year into general allocation money. So if you sell one player for $10 million, you can convert it to three. If you sell two for $4 million, you can convert up to three. And that basically is done to protect teams that are only selling one player that, you know, they were getting less money than a team that sold two, no matter how much revenue they were bringing in. And the last one is essentially decoupling the DPs from the U22 initiative players. So in the past, if you had three senior designated players, so the highest ranking designated player is the easiest way to think of it, you could only have one U22 player. Now, no matter what, you can have three U22 players. And then they kind of within that created this rule that I think is the thing that's most worthy of debating, which is you have two different routes that you can do with that. Now you can go with three senior DPs and three U22s, or you can go with two DPs and you get four U22 players and $2 million of general allocation money. And the idea there is, oh, maybe you can spread that out more across the roster. Talking to some sporting directors, they pushed back on that a little bit, but those are the changes that would go into place in the summer, pending these conversations that the league has to have with the union this week.
Okay. I mean, let me dive into this a little bit. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to take this in multiple ways. First, like giving teams two buyouts to me is not a solution, right? A solution is teams making better decisions on how they spend their money. And so the expertise that it requires to make sure that when you invest in players, that you're making sure that you make the right decision. So giving two buyouts is just excusing more mistakes. And by the way, if I go back over my career when I was in MLS, I think we bought out one player the entire time with all the teams that we had. So, and the importance is not just how much money you have, but the efficiency at which you spend it and the expertise you have built into your club so that right kinds of decisions.
You say only one player during your career got bought out, but I'm sure you could name 10 to 15 to 20 players that should have been bought out, but they didn't have the opportunity to do that. Because I ran into situations where, like, this guy, yeah, he was good in X country, but he's not fitting into what's happening here.
Yeah, but so by giving – so what? So it's okay? Okay to give more money and then more buyouts, which is another – more resources into educating scouts, educating academy, educating infrastructure so that we make better decisions on exactly how we're spending our money?
Well, Jesse, there is no budget on that stuff. MLS teams, the unrestricted cap in MLS is front office. You can.
I understand, but you should. I think an initiative is to force teams to invest in infrastructure. not ask them to spend it freely however they want, but to force teams to it. This is done across the world, by the way, with by different leagues, that you have a minimum spend for scouting budgets, for all these things, so that you make sure that you're building your expertise within the league. That's a big thing in the Premier League. That's how they've really elevated so much of the expertise, right?
Yeah.
So there's that. There's that part. This excuses making mistakes. All right. I would always talk about, okay, we all want to coach better players. I was in a coaches meeting once where Todd Durbin presented, we have a youth player, an academy player initiative, and then we're upping TAM and GAM. And everyone in the room is going, yeah. Well, that's great because we believe in the academy and we want more players. And I was sitting next to Mike Petke at the time, and Mike Petke was with Salt Lake. And we were the two teams that were leading in homegrown minutes by far. Right. And I said, well, wait a minute. These are competing interests here. Right. What do we understand that by giving more TAM, we're actually going to be taking away from potential for young players? And so why not create more incentives? If everyone sits in here and says, oh, yeah, our identity is academy players, and they play 10% of the minutes that the New York Red Bulls and Real Salt Lake do, why not incentivize what the New York Red Bulls and Salt Lake are doing and find ways to actually put money where it's going to matter in the long run, which we all care about the development of the game. And I still think that youth development needs to be a big part of that. Okay. That's a side note. So you got me going. Okay, you got me going,
everybody. Jesse's triggered. Now,
there's another part. Okay,
Paul, thanks for being on Jesse's show. By the way, it's gonna be Jesse. From
here. No, for me, no one wants to hear Tata Martino whine about his budget and the budgets of other teams. Okay, and let me tell you right here, Miami is the number one by Transfermarkt player pool in the league at 85 million. The next closest is Atlanta at 61 and Seattle at 55. So this is hypocritical. Like, if he wants to complain about how he doesn't have the same budget as what the Mexican team does, and we can go through that because he's not far off, actually, from what the Mexican teams have, then he has to also, when he wins games, acknowledge the fact that, yeah, my team's better than the other teams, right? Like, you can't have your cake and eat it too, man. I'm sorry. So, but this is how football works. This, everybody has their own idea and opinion of what's happening with them and how it's working. I was in the Premier League playing against teams with £1 billion budget. Like, that is a freaking discrepancy. Okay. And by the way, I didn't complain once in the media. I didn't make excuses. I didn't rat out my owner or our team or any of it. Because you live in realities, and your realities are on the day, whoever you're tasked with playing, can you be better? Can you be better? And no one wants to hear excuses.
Yeah, I hear all of the things you're saying. I think for me, it gets summed up into one idea that I had a discussion with somebody who works in the league, and you know, he put it best, which is like, for me, the problem isn't all of these little things that get put in or taken out or changed or tweaked. It's the system itself. Because the system is designed to try to force teams to all operate within the same idea of how to build a team. Now, you can have different aspects of that idea, like Red Bull and Philly now, you know, they're more youth driven. But within that, you still have to have most of your money spent on DPs, the next most spent on U22s, the next most spent on TAM. And then you got some breakouts for homegrown players. If you're Miami, same idea. Your most money is on your top three players, then the next three, then the next. And it really allows for slight variations in game models, slight variations in building teams, but not a lot. And I think if you were to do what the rest of the world does with a cap and just say, okay, here is how much money you're allowed to spend, and we trust you to spend it smartly or to the best that you can, I think it does a lot of things for the leagues. It allows for more variation of identity, of how to build teams and how to build rosters, which then I think leads to more variation in how teams play. And it also puts more pressure on teams to invest in scouting infrastructure.
Of course. And you have to
fail. There's no one to blame but yourself, right?
You have to decide what you want to prioritize by your market, by the type of team you want to build, everything.
Exactly.
Right? And Paul, I always say that we live in the United States is a capitalist society, and MLS and sports in general are run like communism. Yeah. Right. Like, everyone has to be fair. And believe me, I like the aspect of parity. I really do, because it gives everybody a chance. Then I've worked a lot in socialist countries, right, where the infrastructure is clearly socialist and their professional sports leagues are capitalist. Right. Yep. And so I'm not saying what I think is the right model. I get both sides, and for people who want to achieve and try to push the envelope for what greatness can become, then if they have the money and the resources and they have the fan base and everything else, then I say, let them go for it. Right. But that's one of the things I think we have to figure. MLS is always trying to be in between, and the league office wants to control things, but and some owners want to control things because they don't want player salaries to inflate. They don't want cost of other things that require a club to be good. If somebody starts spending more money on infrastructure, training grounds, all of these things, and it now pushes them above the others, then they don't like this.
Right.
Right. No, and then there's other owners who say, I want to go for it. I want to go to the moon. And so that what MLS has to figure out is what kind of league does it want to be? And until then, yeah, it's not going to be easy to play against the Mexican teams because they spend more, they have more history and expertise, and they're in a better place with their club teams right now.
I think what makes sense to me was that the league started in that style or that philosophy because of the failed leagues that we had leading up to it, and coming off the 94 World Cup, you wanted to have some control of what was happening so this thing could kind of grow. My disappointment with MLS is that they never evolved from that system. They're trying to now, but there was no exit strategy to how are we going to let go of some of this control as we grow and as we build and as we have ambition from these owners who have made a lot of money for a reason in a capitalistic mentality and society. So yeah, I think there's a lot to unpack there. And I guess that's my no exit strategy, that we still have the handcuffs off and we're still slowly doing it, as opposed to just letting the handcuffs come off. So I guess the big question is there should be a minimum floor of what teams should spend? And then conversely, what would be that number, that cap? And will DPs still exist? Or you just say, hey, here's 10, you can spend up to 15 million, however you want, which I think is better, because I think it does play into creating different identities, like you said, Paul. Jesse, what do you got?
Two things. Or does promotion relegation change the dynamic? No, listen, I'm probably getting a call from Don Garber after this. Right?
Wait.
But get him on the show. Like that's in the end, that's what the equalizer is, right? Is the ones who have money and resources and want to spend will have the chance to succeed, and those that don't will fall off. And then a new crop of teams and owners and players and coaches will have the opportunity. Right. And so this is, I mean, listen, promotion relegation is a whole nother level of what professional football is, right? Believe me. But like, still that's a natural sort of social Darwinism. Right. And then let me say this. So at Miami is 85 million. Monterey is the number one spending, or has the number one player pool value and these aren't euros, by the way, sorry, not dollars. What is Monterey's roster squad? What is that? What's it worth?
I would say probably like 80.
Jimmy, yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Same. Probably the same.
95. It's 95.
Okay, so but look at the spread there, Jesse. Like, look at the spread of where that money is. I mean, you've got Inter Miami's valuation on transfer market, 25 million is going to be at Messi. Right. And then who's the next one up after Messi? Is it still...
and Messi's the biggest difference maker in the game.
Then the drop off from there.
It's like when you're doing Premier League fantasy.
Wouldn't you rather have, like, if you had $20 million to spend, like, this is the debate, right? That doesn't exist in MLS. It's like, would you rather spend that on 10 $2 million players, or on 3 $5 million players? And then you trickle down the rest of your money from there.
But let's also. I understand, but Tata also has Suarez, Jordi Alba, Busquets, yeah. Even some of the young players in the squad aren't bad. He's not.
We're all out there.
If Jim Curtin loses in CONCACAF against a Mexican team,
which he did,
and he wants to complain about the disparity in investment, I think he has a lot more credence.
Sure.
Than Tata Martino, please.
Sure, I would agree with that. But Tata's speaking on behalf of the league, and the reality is,
no, he's not. He's bitter that he lost, Paul.
Of course,
he's bitter that he lost.
But he's not wrong in the. If you look at the history of this league, 4 out of the last 6 years, they've had one semifinalist in the Champions League semifinal, CONCACAF Champions Cup semifinals. For 4 of the last 6 years, only one of the 4 final teams are MLS teams, and only once in the history of the league have they won this competition. So let's acknowledge that there is a problem here. And part of it is the schedule, when you play.
The schedule, the timing, for sure.
Awful.
And, but 10 million, my point is 10 million in players shouldn't be that difference.
I would agree with that too. I think that there are so many different avenues we can go into. Like you're talking about the history of the league, the passion of those fan bases. There's chance and luck sometimes that goes into it. I mean, Inter Miami getting a red card at home and giving up two goals in the final 10 minutes factors into this series. Drake Callender's mistake factor, all these things that are, you know, outside of it. But I do think, like, at the end of the day, when we look at the gap between the two leagues and closing that gap at the top, like if you look at Leagues Cup, you see that the lower level Mexican teams are not better than MLS. It's really, how do you achieve becoming the best league in this hemisphere? Like, forget about just Mexico. Like, can you become better than the Brazilian league? Can you be the best teams in the Americas? And you're going to have to spend more eventually to do that. These rules that got instituted this summer, I don't think are enough to do that. But that doesn't mean question. MLS. Yeah, MLS can find a way to get there. The question is, how do you do it and how much do you have to spend? And I don't think you have to spend that much more than you're spending now. I think you just have to allow for that money to be spent more efficiently so that you're not so dependent on three or four players, so that when you lose Facundo Farias to an ACL injury, that the replacement is Robert Taylor, right? That you can try to start to close those gaps over the course of the roster. And you know, as Jesse started this thing saying, take your money that you're not restricted on and pour it into the academy, into the scouting infrastructure, so that you can have scouts all over the world, that you can have a process. And MLS will say they're doing that, right? They're spending $3 to $4 million a year on MLS Next Pro to try to build that league. They're spending $3 million a year on the academies. But I think we'd all probably say more can be done on the scouting side. We all would say there's more that can be done to build that part up. I just don't know where the league will take this, because I think they've built up infrastructure. They've built up the training facilities, the stadiums all over the league that didn't exist when that jersey that you're wearing, Jimmy, was playing, or when Jesse was in the league.
Of course. The league's made leaps and bounds for me. Leaps and bounds.
Infrastructure. And I have no problem with that.
And that's the reason why there's no need for excuses. It's the same in Europe. When coaches aren't doing well, they go into the sport director's office every transfer window and they say, I need more players. I need more players. Right?
But so
you have a reality. Everyone has a reality that they live in. And then you have to maximize the potential of what you have. And no one wants to hear excuses.
Paul, we appreciate your time. Make sure you check him out on The Athletic, Paul Tenorio. Last question, short answer, yes or no. Do you think these rules from MLS are a step in the right direction?
Yes and no. It's such a cop-out. Yes and no. Anything you add money-wise in an investment is a good thing. It's a good thing.
It's more to waste, Paul.
Let's stop tweaking things. Let's look at the system itself and say, how can we make this efficient and better? And they're doing that. They say they're doing that. So maybe we see, but I still think like these little changes are not what the goal should be in this league.
Paul Tenorio, thank you so much for your time. More Call It What You Want is coming up right after this.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together, we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
Welcome back to Call It What You Want. That was a fun segment with Paul Tenorio, mainly because Chuck wasn't on the segment.
The best segment we've ever had. The best one we've ever had.
Jesse was fired up. He was fired up. Super triggered. Let's see if he's a little bit more calmed down for this. We're going to get into Americans Abroad, do a little weekend preview for everybody. For our American audiences, there's a couple games that you can take a look at. PSV. With three Americans, taking on Vitesse, who have an American of their own, and Paxton Aronson. Torino will be taking on Juventus, Weston McKennie and Timo Weah in the Turin Derby. That's on the Golazo Network at 12 p.m. Eastern. This is on Saturday. Monterrey taking on Tigres. Big derby in Mexico. That game kicks off very late, 11:10 p.m. Eastern. On Sunday, hey, Liverpool take on Crystal Palace. That'll be a good game, though Chris Richards is out for that one. But Liverpool got to have a response after getting smacked by Atalanta in the Europa League 3-0 at home. Sassuolo will host AC Milan. We talked about it a little bit earlier with Christian Pulisic. That game kicks off at 9 a.m. Eastern on Paramount Plus. So a lot of good games. Chuck, I'm coming to you first, though, because we missed you in the last segment. What game stands out for you? What do you want to talk about?
I want to see if Ricardo Pepi is back in the team for PSV, if he's going to play, given all the comments with his agent from him himself, just to see what's the deal. Are you going to be in the team? Are you going to be, you know, just continue to be a player who comes in off the bench for Luke de Jong and makes an impact? You know, is Luke de Jong going to be rested at times? You know, at 33 years old, I could see him maybe taking time to come off a bench once or a game off. But either way, got to see him on the pitch. And then he's playing against another Aronson, Paxton Aronson in Vitesse. So should be an interesting match, given that Vitesse is in the bottom of the league. But Paxton Aronson has done really well with his loan.
Yeah, that should be a good game. I'm excited to watch that one as well. Jesse, how about you?
Yeah, I'm going to watch Preston North End against Norwich City. So you've watched a lot of Josh Sargent this year, and I haven't watched as much. So I want to pay attention to that match. Also for Preston North End is Dwayne Holmes. So another American. So be able to watch both of them. But specifically, I'll be focusing on Josh and see what his performance looks like.
No, I love that. I'm currently in Kansas City right now. I'm going to go to the Sporting Kansas City Inter Miami game at Arrowhead Stadium tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll be watching that one in person, which should be a lot of fun. Going to see a lot of my old teammates, which should be great. But the game that I really want to watch is in Serie B. Venezia, with our two Americans, Gianluca Busio and Tanner Tessman, will be taking on Brescia. Now, why this is important in Serie B, the top two teams automatically advance, and it could be the top three teams based on this rule that they have, if the third place team has a 14-point gap over the fourth place team, which isn't going to happen. Parma's on top of 66. They're looking pretty good to get back and get promoted to Serie A. Como, though, is in second with 61 points. Cremonese has 59. Venezia has 58. So it looks like there's going to be a playoff. So if that gap is less than 14 points, it goes into a playoff. And it gets crazy. Like, teams fifth through eighth play in a one-off to get into the semifinals. And there's a two-legged semifinal. And then there's a one game final. It gets intense. But Venezia are on 58 points, and they need to beat Brescia, who are currently in seventh. So this is a big game for them. If they can see it out, maybe sneak into that spot and get out of the playoff, or if they can get into the playoff just with good form, I think it's going to be a big one. But it would be nice to see both of these Americans get back into Serie A, and hopefully that could impact their futures, whether it's with the national team or just to compete at the highest level in Italy. I think both of these players, Tessman and Busio, will be part of the Olympic team, or I'm hopeful that they will be. So this is a big game for them for a lot of different reasons, and that's why I'm focusing on that.
I would like to know what the Italian logarithm is that determines that 14 points is the magic number.
Yeah, exactly right. It's crazy, right?
Like, what the heck? I've never heard of that. So I don't know.
I was going to say, there's also an American on Como.
Yeah.
That's right. Yes, that's right. True. That's right. Gioacchini. Excuse me.
And so isn't it that Cesc Fabregas is like the assistant coach, but he's really the head coach, but he doesn't have his pro license. So
that's right. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot going on. Serie B sounds like a lot of
fun. Well, this is Italian. You're like, no, Cesc isn't our coach. No, he's the assistant. No.
All right, well, before we get to the next break.
And he's got his clipboard next.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. Yeah.
Assistant.
Well, we want to let everybody know that Josh Sargent actually sat down with our very own Nika Cantor and Alexis Guerreros for an interview. It's on our podcast feed. Make sure you go check that out and get a little bit more insight on Josh and his incredible form, scoring a bunch of goals for Norwich this season, and how that could parlay into some good form for the U.S. as he looks to get on the Copa America roster. Also, just so everybody knows, the Golazo show is happening next week. Europa League quarterfinals, every goal, all-in-one show. I'll be on that show next week. I'm going in studio. I don't know if Chuck's going to be doing it with me or not, but it's on the Golazo Network. And
of course I am. Gosh.
Okay, great. Oh, you know what I heard is I have to wear a suit. So that just changes everything.
You do.
Wow. Super serious. Yeah. Suit and tie. I'm going to have to bring my A game. Yeah. It's going to be pretty awesome. But yeah, that's next week. Make sure you tune in for that. And I'm excited to be in person with you, Chuck. Give you a nice little hug.
So are we doing the podcast together then?
You know what? I don't know. I can't confirm or deny any rumors this time. But it would be a lot of fun to make that happen. All right, we're going to take our last break and call it what you want. When we come back, we got a little surprise for the birthday of Golazo Network that's been around for 1 year. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the stretch run of Call It What You Want. I'm Jimmy alongside Chuck and Jesse, and we got to get into it. Celebration time. 1 year of the Golazo Network. It has been around for, well, now 1 year and a day. Very exciting times. Chuck, you've been there since day one. And what's your biggest, or let's say most fondest memory of this last year? Because you've done a lot of great work.
I think overall, it's just the experiences from all the guests, all the traveling, I feel like I've gotten a chance to meet everyone, all the people behind the scenes, all the hard work they put into it. I honestly take so much gratitude in being able to work with you guys, and, just doing something like this, that brings excitement to my day. I love having these type of conversations. I love being able to sit down and do things on Kicking It. Morning Footy is a staple in this country now. People wake up to it like, oh, if I want to learn about what's going on in the world of football and soccer, this is the show I want to tune into. So honestly, it's been everything. There's not one specific moment that I'd say, that's why I do this. It's the whole thing.
Come on, Chuck, you're being humble. Kicking It just got nominated for a sports Emmy. I mean, let's give it up to Chuck. That's amazing, man.
It was Jesse's episode.
Jesse was on the show as well.
Oh, it was my episode? Oh, wow. Wow.
It was Jesse's episode.
No.
And Jesse.
Wild. It's wild.
It's wild, yeah?
It's wild.
Yeah, it's like super exciting. I'm hopeful that you guys win the Emmy. That would be nice to put on the CV. Now, Jesse, kind of on the outside looking in, I mean, how important do you think it is to have a 24/7 Golazo Network that just really lives and breathes the beautiful game? I would have killed for this when I was a kid.
Yeah, well, first I'd say my favorite moment is maybe in this podcast because you said more smart and bestest fondest memory. I think you used both of those phrases.
You didn't go to Princeton. Leave the guy alone.
I didn't graduate from college.
No. So
you know what, kids? Stay in school. Stay in school.
No, it's I mean you're right that I get more like on Instagram. I followed it now and I get some of the little things that come up and I mean, there's some, I've realized by whether it was doing Kicking It or this show, there's some really talented people behind the scenes, probably more talented than the people that are on camera, quite actually.
That's true.
But and it's nice to have more football content, right? And I think this is a big part of the evolution in our sport is not just what's the quality on the pitch, but what's the level of scrutiny, attention given, energy and media and everything. The more that it upgrades, the more that it becomes more relevant. So I think that you guys have done a good job. I knew both of you as players and watching you guys grow into the roles that you've played as media. I'm impressed with both of you. And there's a lot of people. I mean, Tony Miola for me has been a really impressive guy too, to see now behind the mic, behind the camera or in front of the camera. Sorry. So yeah, I mean, it's exciting, and I'm happy for everybody that gets a chance that loves the sport to work at it full time in a different capacity than maybe what they thought they would be a part of it as their primary job or primary role. So yeah, it's cool.
Building off of what you guys said, because you guys hit all the marks there, what I think is the most exciting is the foundation that's been laid in year one and where it's going to go in year two and year three. And obviously as we build up to the 2026 World Cup. So the future is incredibly bright. And as you mentioned, so many talented people behind the scenes that are making us look and sound a lot smarter than we probably deserve to be. But my favorite moment, my bestest, most fondest moment that I absolutely love is this little betting thing that we do on Morning Footy. And I just want to show everybody that I go on every week. I'm on Morning Footy every Friday, and me and Charlie do some betting, and it looks like I've almost doubled you, Chuck. I don't know if this means that I know more about ball than you do, like that I just know the game better, but I'm in the green and you're in the red, and that's all I got to say about it.
It looks like your Liga MX yeah. and Charlie's MLS.
I just want to be able to spend. They won't let me spend. I want to bet big. Excuses. I would be good if I could spend.
You're just right. not using your money wisely, Chuck.
I'll tell you right now, it's not over till it's over. These parlays, I'm going to be hitting
Charlie, go double or nothing every time. Just keep going. Double or nothing. Double or nothing. Double or nothing.
Jesse, I have to do these 7-18 parlays.
Which is why you lose.
Just taking massive swings until I catch them. One of these days, it's going to hit.
It's going to happen. One of your DPs is going to pay.
You're like the worst gambler ever. You're like the worst.
I'm going for the big bet, baby. Scared money don't make no money. As Jesse would say, mo better. I got to get mo better at it.
You got to be more average to good, Chuck.
Average to good.
All right, everybody. We are calling it a show. Thank you so much for everything that you do and all your support for Call It What You Want. We hope you have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. Later.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.